This is Natasha with X-Ray FM. I'm here at Old Portland Hardware and Architectural, and I'm speaking with the owner, Brett. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You bet. Thanks for coming by today. I'm glad to see you.
You know, when I first came into this store, I was so overwhelmed with sensations, both the visual sensation, the size of the space, the care with which all of your items are displayed, and the fact that we can buy any of it. It's almost like a museum you can shop in. Is that unfair to say?
No, we actually have a lot of customers point that out, although on a technicality, we'll say that there are some things that aren't for sale.
So I want to ask you, you know, what started your desire to preserve, restore, and reuse hardware architectural pieces and kind of the associated tools?
When I was a young kid, I mean, even starting when I was 7 or 8, I wanted to be that guy in National Geographic or Smithsonian Magazine. It was digging up old stuff and holding it up and wondering what the heck it was and, you know, what stories it had to tell. And, you know, this was long before Raiders of the Lost Ark or any of the, you know, hoopla that went with that. As I got older and supposedly matured, I had directions I thought I should go in and went with what seemed more logical. But it seemed to always steer back to the older stuff. And it wasn't until decades later and I was going through a box of old stuff at the previous job that I had, and I was pulling out things and wondering what it was and was like, holy heck, I made it. I'm here. I did it.
You know, how much time do you usually spend and devote to restoring the pieces here and I'm sure many more that we don't see when we come into this shop?
We try to keep the restoration process to the minimal amount possible because we like old things to look old. We don't polish anything. We like old brass to look like old brass, etc.
Is there ever a point with a piece that it becomes a personal project that you don't feel like you can let that one go?
Absolutely. So as to earlier, when I mentioned that there are things that aren't for sale in the shop, there are some iconic pieces of Portland's architectural history that are very specific to Portland. And not only do a lot of our sales go out of Portland, they go out of the state and sometimes even out of the country.
Wow, I'm kind of curious to know how far your pieces end up going around the world.
We have had several things go to China, to Japan, a couple to Northern Europe, but those are mostly the out-of-country places.
Are there any pieces that you really look forward to restoring? When you see them, your eyes light up a little bit wider.
We're always attracted by good antique lighting. You know, we specialize in pre-World War II hardware for homes and things like that. And we deviate beyond that sometimes. But when you get a good, unusual light fixture that you maybe have never seen before, it's not that it's worth more money, it's that it evokes more curiosity and wants you to, you know, we go down a lot of rabbit holes trying to find out the history behind things. Mm-hmm. So when we see a good light fixture or a piece of door hardware or just something that attracts us that's not usual, we love that.
So in effect, you could say that this store is a bit like an antiques roadshow, perhaps.
Kind of, except we skip the whole value part.
Yeah, I find that part of the show rather boring. I don't care. You know, if you're drawn to an item, then the value is purely personal preference rather than financial gain.
Absolutely. I tell people they should buy old pieces because they love them, not because they think they're worth something.
So when I came in here a couple of months ago, I found a section that was the $5 and under section. And I went home with a 1940s crank. And I love it, and I put it on my wall, and I fully intend to find something to crank with it. But, you know, I think that's the thing. There's something for everybody here. It's not just, you know, kind of some of the hardware stores around Portland are very expensive. They're very specific. They also don't necessarily display some of the items with the obvious care and love that you do. And so you take this to another level, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Having been around the country and gone to a lot of architectural salvage and antique stores, industry standard for a lot of especially architectural antique stores tends to be rather chaotic. Because it's salvage and the people running them treat it like salvage. But I see so many customers that are in those other stores that because I always watch customers at other stores when I'm there, that get kind of lost in the weeds and they might be looking at the person working at the counter and saying, "Well, this doorknob worked for my house," and the person just shrugs and goes, "I don't know, the pile's over there, go look." But these people aren't experts on that kind of stuff. So we like to help them. And plus, if it's too chaotic, they can't imagine what a shelf will look like in their house, a bookshelf or something like that. But if it's displayed well, they don't have to think too hard. They're like, "That's going to look perfect in the living room next to the etagere," or whatever it's called.
Frankly, I walked around here and I can think of every piece going somewhere in my house, and it makes this place wonderful and completely deadly in equal measure.
Thank you. We like the deadly part.
Anything you couldn't part with?
Yes. There are pieces, and eventually those pieces will often eventually get a price tag on them, or a price tag that will, like, all right, for that price, I will let it go. Not very many pieces. But I would go back to what we mentioned earlier, and that I really get attached to the old Portland pieces that have stories behind them.
Can you give me an example of a piece like that?
Yeah. So Morning Oregonian was the original name of the Oregonian newspaper. They had a beautiful building built in the late 1800s, torn down in the 40s. And when they tore it down, they had this custom hardware throughout the entire door hardware throughout the entire building. And right before they tore it down, they told all the employees, bring screwdrivers to work on their last day, and everybody could take Memento doorknob sets home. And so they kind of went the ways of the winds. And they have slowly been percolating back up through collections and inheritance and cleanouts and collections. So we've got a little bit of collections of some of that beautiful hardware from the late 1800s. That's probably the easiest one to pick right off the top. You know, our name of our shop is Old Portland Hardware. So it's literally keeping the old Portland hardware back together and in Portland.
Okay, so I'm thinking of, and I'm sorry to throw curveball questions at you, but I'm thinking, has anybody brought anything in that they thought was old Portland and it turned out not to be?
There's a lot of people that come in with secondhand stories and things but they can't prove. You know, you have to have kind of documentation. You have to have a path that you can look at, and whether it's the Oregon Historical Society pictures or something, where you can be like, "Up, there it is. It's in that picture." So we always have to have something of evidence, but there's a lot of secondhand stories. And, well, my uncle said that his grandfather told him that his wife said, because it came from her grandma, and that's why this knob from the 1980s is an antique. And you're like, wait, what? No, it doesn't work that way.
I'm thinking about your turnover. Is it sufficient for this 10,000 square foot? You know, I mentioned the Indiana Jones Ark of the Covenant style warehouse, and I wonder if all the future shelf content is somewhere else and you have to have multiple storage areas.
We do have multiple storage areas and shelves of stuff in somebody else's houses, garages, basements, barns, outbuildings, etc. We have very little back stock actually in our possession. We have a small area of the store that we call the corral, which is a bunch of large shelving units left by the previous business that we kind of corralled into a square, and we use that for any back stock we might have, but it's not that big. So we are constantly looking for new things to buy from people.
With that in mind, and that's fantastic, it means that you are playing to the size of space that you have. You know, are you looking for pieces in particular? Are you seeing a deficit of any pieces that you would like to continue acquiring, or is there quite a reasonable plethora across the board of stuff that's coming in?
I used to try to look for kind of very specific items, but then you're spending so much time chasing things that are difficult to find. I kind of really love the serendipity of finding things that I didn't expect to see. Like just this last week, I went out by Newburgh, out into the middle of the woods. There's a beautiful house out there. It was full of all sorts of fantastic stuff, and most of it was not anything we would actually want, even though a lot of it was actually antique. It just didn't speak to our aesthetic here at the store and what the types of things we specialize in. But we found some great treasures.
That's wonderful. Is there a network of people in business here that you say, okay, well, that's not a piece for us, but I know that such and such would really appreciate that, and that would speak to their vibe and their ethos of their store?
Yeah, well, I've got other stores. Depending on what the item is, we're always happy to refer people that are trying to sell us stuff to other places if we're not willing to buy it, or they might go instead.
How often do estate sales come up? Is that fairly regularly, or do you have to kind of search for them?
So estate sales, like your traditional driving down the road type of estate sale, there's actually a website that posts them every week with pictures of stuff that's in it. Estate sales are difficult for me because I like to buy larger amounts if I can of stuff, and a lot of times estate sales are what you can carry in your arms. I always tell customers that ask that question, estate sales for me are kind of like hot dogs or donuts. Seems like a good idea at the time, but about an hour later, I'm like, oh man, what have I done? But sometimes we stumble into a really good one.
When you end your day and you're taking that sip of whiskey or whatever your imbibement may be, what piece of music truly reflects you and this absolutely wonderful store?
That's a really good question. And you assumed correctly, whiskey is the one. Piece of music, I'm not going to go with a song because any good sip of whiskey is going to take more than just one song. So I'm going to go with an album. And I'm going to say something dark and moody that evokes old stories. Maybe something like the old, remember the movie The Mission? Ennio Morricone. Put that on, turn it up a little bit, sit back in a nice mohair chair and sip the whiskey.
Walking past this wonderful old switchboard, I had my eye on this, and it says it's from Franklin High School. How long have you had this piece?
We've actually had this piece for quite a while because, well, strangely enough, not everybody wants a 3 foot by 4 foot switchboard old school in their living room. So we've had it for quite a while, but it's a fun piece. It inspires a lot of curiosity, especially from younger folks.
I think the cabinet itself is absolutely gorgeous. And, as a piece just to have in the living room, if I could justify the spend and I could sneak it home without getting a conversation, it would be coming home with me, frankly.
Fair warning, it is heavy.
What is it made out of?
Well, it's all made of the outer shell of it is all 3/4 inch oak all the way around. But the amount of copper wiring in there is probably 150 pounds.
My goodness, we might edit that out so that people don't know there's that amount of copper wiring in there. You might have some unwelcome visitors.
Well, most of that weight on the copper wiring is the old wrapping of the copper wiring, which is absolute garbage.
So. Ah, good to know. Yes, and probably PCB-related insulating stuff on it.
Yeah, don't lick it.
Yeah. that's a rule of thumb for life, I think. Just don't lick it until you know.
Well, sometimes.
I was very much drawn to some of the stained glass that's up high, which is truly beautiful. Can you speak to, there's a piece over there, the red piece with some fans on it. Could you speak to the history of any of these?
Some of them I can. The red one is actually a pretty spectacular piece in that it's not necessarily like a pieced together piece of stained glass, like most glass is put together from smaller pieces of art glass to make a larger whole. That is a Victorian era piece of what's called flashed glass, which is a standard piece thickness of clear glass with a very, very thin layer of intense red flash heated onto the surface. And then they acid etched a pattern that took away the red, leaving a red background. And it's kind of an Asian motif in the Eastlake style. Charles Eastlake was an architect. That kind of originated some of the Victorian style hardware motifs, and it's one of those, but it's very striking.
It really is, and I think you can get terribly lost in so many things, and I get caught up in some of the bigger pieces. And I remember from last time you had a light fixture, I believe, that was one of the old city lights. It may have been in the back corner, perhaps. Do you come across some of the old city kind of hardware very often that's up for sale?
Not really, and I often, a lot of the municipality type stuff that's gigantic and it's very difficult to use and also therefore difficult to sell, and it takes up an immense amount of space. So there's a lot of stuff that I will pass on. I mean, we do have some old pieces of buildings in our permanent collection type stuff that we keep around with, nice aesthetic value to it there. That's our museum quality type fun part of coming to the store just to look at. Mm-hmm. But we don't get a lot of big pieces like that, although I do like the table we were sitting at a little while ago. Mm. Came out of Portland City Hall. That was it's an antique table that they would spread plans out for people wanting to do big projects and things on. So that's why that table was so large.
Wow. You know, I hadn't actually noticed that table previously, because I think I get so caught up in, you know, I mean, you've got some transformer bushings over there. You've got some glass insulators. I'm from that construction world. And so I'm fascinated by some of the more engineering aspects. We've got a variety of calipers here, which I love, some old engineering calipers. And then we come to the section that I like because I'm a cheapskate. Mm-hmm. And so we're coming to the back corner, which is the $5 section. Is there a reason why you have the $5 section? Is it for people that would like to own something and maybe they're just not in the market to spend a little bit more money?
The $5 section has multiple uses for us. One, there's a lot of things that we get in that are just too cool to throw away or recycle that could have secondary uses, but we want to leave it up to somebody else. And we also get a lot of people that are coming in that like to, whether they're building birdhouses or lamps or objet d'art or want to make creative hooks to hang their hats and coats on, they like to just go through the $5 bins because you never know what you're going to find in there. It's just a mixed match of old stuff that we kind of just have filtered for. It looks like it could be usable, but we're not sure.
So this time around, I noticed you got a lot of kerosene lamp parts. Did you come across that as a bulk, or did you just collect them over time?
That load all came from one bulk buy, where it wasn't really, it was an estate sale, but not an open to the public estate sale, because it was in a weird neighborhood where there was zero place to park, and we were invited to go. And they had a large, large box of those, and I thought that they would be perfect in the $5 bin, so I grabbed it for that purpose expressly.
Yeah, and some still have really good quality wicks on them, which is great.
Yeah. People are always looking for parts.
Absolutely. So I want to bring it, as we move back through, you know, my eye caught the chandelier with the doll's heads. One of my friends is an artist and utilizes various toy parts, and I thought that was fantastic. I'm guessing that's not for sale. Is that part of the structure of this space?
So one of the people that work with me here, Anne, she is in charge of the Halloween window every year because we do the big front window for the roll-up garage door. We had recently got it in that chandelier body without the rest of the lamp, and we happened to have a large box of doll heads because, you know, like you do.
Yeah.
and so Anne created that, and then after Halloween was over, she decided it really couldn't go back in the attic, so it's out here on the floor.
I absolutely love it. I was totally drawn to it, and I really appreciate that that's something that the creative side, not only of restoring and maintaining pieces, but also having some fun with it.
Yeah, we create a lot of lighting and shelf units, and we make tables out of things. The old sewing base with the box on top that you can store things in, or a tabletop on top of it. So there's lots of repurposing.
So I'm kind of curious. This is a big space. You allow and you afford a customer plenty of space to roam around. But you have a spot back there, which is where you do your work, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yes, we do. So almost everything that comes to the store, nothing goes out on the floor without being at least looked over and at the bare minimum Windexed and cleaned or dusted or whatever. So we've got three workstations, one for Aaron, one for Anne, one for myself. And just about everything in the store goes through one of those stations.
Can we go back there and have a look?
Sure.
I'm really curious to see what goes on. And you know, it's just the process of a working space that's used every day to help maintain these beautiful pieces.
So Aaron at this workspace specializes in a lot of things. He's very talented. He has great mechanical ability. But he has become our hardware, antique door hardware and window hardware, house hardware expert. So you can see the hundreds of mortises that we've got up over here, door mortises that are the door latches for the old homes. He cleans and makes sure all the doorknobs have the parts they need and they can match up to back plates because they're all different and they don't all interchange like you'd think they might. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've got an array of old tools because almost all the old stuff uses like straight-edge screwdrivers, no such thing as a Phillips. The Phillips came along in the 30s. Mm. Fun fact, by the way, it was invented here in Portland, Oregon.
Well, my goodness, I had no idea.
Most people don't know that, and I didn't know that for almost all my life. And I think it had to do with the early shipbuilding that was going on in Portland and coming up with faster ways to do things, and a guy here in Portland invented it.
I mean, I like a good flathead screw. Do you ever find that you have to create sort of almost like a Frankenstein's monster of tools because you just can't find the right one?
Not usually, because most of the stuff back then was meant to be taken apart and repaired, and they didn't have a huge market for specialized tools like they do today. You had to be able to go down to the local hardware store and find what you needed. You know, think back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, here on the West Coast, we were at the end of the planet. The East Coast had a lot more, that's where most of this was all made, on the East Coast and the Midwest. And out here, it was all being shipped out. Almost none of this was made here. But the people shipping it out, they didn't make their pieces to be obsolete or here, buy a new one, because it was a long ways away. Almost everything back then was meant to be taken apart and repaired and put back together.
Yeah, I really struggle with planned obsolescence now. I think that's why my heart is always driven and kind of drawn to older pieces, because there is something very robust and there is care in longevity of older pieces that we, as part of our economic society, are not encouraged to have.
It is a turn of events that I find disappointing, yeah.
But the amount of people that come into your store would suggest that you have a lot of people that also agree with you in the older pieces are either aesthetically or in a user capacity much more robust and enduring.
They are, and they have an aesthetic value that pulls you in. Even like if you go to a local modern hardware store and look at the door hardware section, you don't have people going, ooh, look at that. But they come in here and they see things they've never seen before, things that evoke imagination or history or a story. And they start asking a lot of questions like, what's this? Where did it come from? What time is it from? What's it mean? Do you know more about it? That's the biggest difference right there, is the aesthetic or the ethos behind it, or the feeling it evokes.
I'm always blown away by the doorknobs, the key plates, the amount of detail that goes into them, and you have a huge array here. It just shows how much care in being creative every element of society used to have that I don't necessarily see now. Design maybe has gone in a different direction that is very simplified. It's curved lines. It's not filigree and other things.
Yes, and I think that has been going in a continuum as long as we can remember. So the Victorian era morphed into a total opposite direction with the arts and crafts movement, and then that got taken over by the Art Deco movement and into the Atomic Age. And after World War II, there was a sea change in manufacturing processes, and they realized they could do things a lot cheaper, faster, and then the planned obsolescence started to come in, and it just keeps evolving, so there will always be change. I'm sure 100 years from now, somebody's going to be like, remember that stuff back from the early 2000s? So good.
What else is there anything else we can
yes.
Walk and talk that I can impart? What else can we see?
The little museum alcove of not for sale old Portland hardware items. So we've got a light fixture from the old Oriental Theater, which was this fantastic theater just on the east side of the Morrison Bridge, torn down in 1969, 1970, built in the 20s. The Far East was very, very popular at the time. And if you look at pictures of the inside of the Portland Oriental Theater, which you can find online, all of those pieces of Asia are crammed into this one interior, and this light fixture was the lobby light when you first walked into the lobby of the theater.
Is that a photograph on the fitment that you have there of the theater?
Actually, it is. Yes.
I see here also. So this fitment that photograph is sitting on—that's a very curious one and quite large. Can you speak to that?
I can. So that is one of those pieces that I went through a lot of effort to get, and you couldn't pry it out of my fingers until I closed the shop. And it's all based on an old story in Portland. One of the most crazy big, beautiful, insane Victorian mansions built. The site of the Rockies was a place called the Knapp House up in northwest Portland. And the Knapp House was built in the 1880s, torn down in the 1950s. The Knapps lost or sold the house early on, changed hands a few times. And at some point in the, I think in the 40s, the last owners of it deeded it to the church across the street because they thought it would be a fantastic rectory or church offices or, you know, whatever else that they had it for. And at some point the church said, you know what we need more than a big, beautiful Victorian old house? We need a parking lot.
Oh.
Fortunately, the Portland Art Museum had hired a fantastic photographer at the time named Minor White to photograph some of Portland's old cast iron district, and they got him into the Knapp House before it was torn down, and he did a whole black and white series. It was absolutely beautiful. Anyway, come years later now, almost any beautiful Victorian part that comes into an old antique store, you'll hear this, oh, it could have come from the Knapp House. And it's one of those things where I just roll my eyes in my head, and I have people try to sell me stuff sometimes that'll say that. And unless you have photographic evidence, it's just not there. And this wonderful lady down in Eugene had recently bought a building and called us and said, we bought this building, we're turning it into a brewery. And the previous owners left this beautiful sideboard in here, but it just won't work in our brewery, and we want to make sure it goes to a good home. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's beautiful. Can you send me pictures? And she goes, oh, yeah, I'll send you pictures. Oh, and by the way, it came from the Knapp House. Hopefully on the radio, you can almost hear my eyes rolling back in my head as she said it. And I was like, that's great. Do you have any pictures that can prove that? And she goes, no, I don't. But I found one online that does. And sure enough, there is some Minor White photo in the dining room of the Knapp House. And it's just fantastic.
And did you have to work on it? Because it is very, very detailed.
It took about a week to reassemble because they had to bring it up in parts, and there was about 50 parts that had to all be put together. The tiles from the 1800s back there had to be installed from the back. So after we installed, or after we put all of it together in this massive piece, there's only enough room for two people to try and squeeze it back up against the wall and for two of us to move that thing. It is heavy.
I can well imagine. I do want to ask you, because you touched on the Oregon Historic Society, which is a really invaluable space. They have the records library that you can make an appointment, I believe, and spend time in to do some research. Do you have a relationship with them in terms of, hey, I've got this thing, and you know, can you tell me more about it?
I don't. They often don't have the resources. I've asked about a couple of things, and they're like, you know, whoever's working at the phones or behind it, they're always working on the projects for the displays or whatever they've determined that they're working on, and they do a fantastic job of it. But I have not, it's difficult to get the information I need to go with them with the right information that they can actually help me with.
You know, as a former professional photographer, I could spend many hours with lighting and just play around with the beauty of all of these. And then you get closer and you see the nuances of some of these pieces are so impressive. You know, what is just a bolt or a latch becomes an entire story in its own right. And is that one tiny piece of why you love what you do?
Oh, absolutely. The stories things have are part of, you know, takes me back to when I was a little kid, and that's the fascination part of them, and they're all so beautifully made, and they draw you in all their specific ways. But yeah, the stories are not just the stories that we have to tell about the history, but I think of all these old pieces of hardware that are, say, 125 years old. What have they seen throughout their time in all the rooms and the houses that they've been in for so long? What families have they seen come and go? And then when they're here, I always like to think kind of like that movie Night at the Museum. When the lights go out here, I always like to tell people all the ghosts come out of the hardware. The old ones welcome the new arrivals. They get to tell their stories to each other. And
I kind of love that. Brett, thank you so much. Genuinely, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to X-Ray today. It's been absolutely fascinating. I cannot express enough how much I appreciate this space. You know, I really encourage our listeners to come and check this store out and come with an imagination of maybe where these pieces could go in your own home.
Oh, thank you. This was fun. I really enjoyed this.
Old Portland Hardware and Architectural is located at 1667 Southeast Tacoma Street in Selwood. They're open Wednesday through Sunday from 10 till 6. For X-Ray FM, I'm Natasha Fisher.